Welcome back to the virtual classroom. I'm your host, Kimberly Ring, and I hope that you've had a fantastic week. This week on the podcast, we have Katie Pointer. She's an elementary lead teacher and a fifth grade math teacher at Oregon Virtual Academy. If you aren't following Katie on Instagram at virtually_fifth_grade, you really should be because she is the queen of formative assessments and questioning. I learned a lot from Katie in my research prepping for this podcast. Katie and I explored the different formative assessments from the typical multiple choice exit ticket that we all know and love, all the way to student interviews, which is something I never even thought of or considered. And furthermore, we talked about how all of these can be incorporated into the virtual classroom. So without further ado, here's Katie.
I'm Katie. I teach with Oregon Virtual Academy. I've been doing online education. I'm going to be starting my 12th year doing virtual education. It's crazy. I can't believe it's been that long. 15 years in education, had 3 years in the classroom, and now I've been teaching online forever. I'm focused mostly on fifth grade, mostly on math. I'm also our elementary teacher. Our elementary lead teacher, excuse me there. I live in Bend, Oregon with my family and my two little kids, my husband. Love to be outdoors and stuff, and I'm excited to talk to you today.
I never been to Oregon, but I hear and seen pictures. I've seen it's beautiful, and so I've always wanted to go that way, but I've just never been further than Colorado, I think. I think that's the furthest west I've been. Right? Uh-huh. Oregon's west.
Yes, it is still west. You got to keep going.
One of my best friends came to visit me yesterday. My longest friend, or I guess we would say oldest friend, but my son didn't quite understand that. He's like, so he's old, so I changed it to longest. I've known him the longest. And I thought he was in Virginia for whatever reason, but in fact, he's in South Dakota. So I was like, oh, you're straight up. I don't know where anything is anymore. I thought I knew.
You teach fourth grade. You don't get to the U.S. stuff yet.
That's fifth grade in Oklahoma. Yeah. So I'm assuming it's fifth grade in other places. So anyway, that's besides the point. But that's where you are in case any listeners are out there are wondering, where is Oregon? It's that way. It's west.
So. I'm in the non-rainy part of the state. So most people think of Oregon as rainy, but I'm actually in the middle where it's really dry and really sunny with big mountains.
Okay. Well,
like 300 days of sunshine.
Can I snowboard in Oregon? Is that a thing?
You can.
Oh, okay.
We have a mountain right 30 minutes away.
That's what, I used to go there when I was a kid. You 30 minutes away. That's fantastic. I have to drive 9 hours to go snowboarding if I want to. So it's awful.
Takes an hour on the weekends, maybe more with traffic.
All right. That's just something I like to ask people. Can I snowboard in your state?
There's lots of it.
All right. Well, the actual conversation we're going to have today is about formative assessments. And I'm so stoked to be talking to you about it because you're the queen of formative assessments. I always see you talking about Go Formative. I gave it a shot this past year because of you. And I'm going to give it a go again this school year. But I guess let's just start. What are formative assessments? Why do we do them? Why should we do them? And all that. So in your opinion, what is a formative assessment or progress monitoring? I think those two kind of go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So formative assessment, I used to hate the word assessment. I got so mad a couple years ago when it was assessments. And I was like, why are we testing our kids so much? But formative assessment doesn't have to be a test. And I think a lot of people think about that when they say formative assessment. It's just checking, where are your kids? How are they doing with your lesson? How can you continue to help them? And what do we need to do to help better our students? And it's not like state testing all the time. It's just a little check-in. And it's important to know because if your kids are not understanding something, you can't move on and expect them to understand it. And so it's just a check-in with them to see, okay, how are we doing? What can I do to help you out more? Where are we getting stuck? Sometimes it's your class does not understand common denominators and you need to go back there. And you don't know that unless you're checking in with them. So it's really important just to think about, okay, where are my kids? I'm not testing them. It's just a check-in. I like to call them check-ins with my kids. I'm just checking to see, how are you doing? What do we need to do? And it needs to happen more often than some people do. I do it almost daily to see, how are you guys doing? What can I do to help you? And there's lots of different ways to do it. So, that's just a big thing. And I'm doing a master's class, and it was actually just on assessment. I wrote down some notes from a book I was reading that said, are you assessing to help learning or report on learning? So that's a big thing to think about when you're doing an assessment. Why are you assessing it? Are you wanting to help them, or are you going to just report on it? Is it that summative end of semester checkpoint that's going to give them a grade? So what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And you always have to think to yourself that all assessments should in some way improve your teaching and learning. And that was really,
to interject, but you're saying a lot of things. I'm like, I'm glad to suck it up. So what I've, in the research that I found, because I'm a nerd, I am in my classes now as of this week, but just, I was anyway, researching just because, what it said was formative assessments or progress monitoring should influence how you teach. Anything other than that would be considered a summative. So I was thinking, even in when we call it summative at the beginning of the year, the beginning of the year test, that's really still a formative assessment, because that is going to guide our instruction. So, so really what I got from that is that a formative assessment isn't just like a 10 page or a 10 question test or a screener or whatever you want to call it. It can be whatever length you want. Cause in my mind, formative assessments were always like, they have to be short. That's what makes a formative assessment is that it's short, but really it's just, is it moving? Or is it going to gauge your instruction or change your instruction? But I would say that progress monitoring is normally short because it needs to be in that instance. But if we're going to take a minute and talk about just what is formative assessment, what they are, it's anything that can gauge where we're at and influence where we're going. So, And then what was the other thing that you note. What was that?
Right. That all assessments should in some way improve your teaching and learning.
Yeah. And so even at the end of the year, when I look at those scores, it's not going to change how I teach those specific kids because they're leaving me. So, but it is going to change how I teach the next year. So, in some ways, I guess all assessments are formative in some shape or way or form, but I guess I would consider that last test a more summative, because that's reporting, that's more for reporting how they did, I guess, with that particular set of students. So, so you said you do this you do some sort of formative assessment, progress monitoring every day. How do you do this on the daily? What's it look like daily? Not at the end of a unit or the beginning, but I guess somewhere in the middle. What would that look like for you?
I use just like either their classwork or their exit tickets just to kind of tell me, how did you do today? What do I need to help you with? So it's just using their classwork, their exit ticket, whatever assignment, task you have them doing, just checking in, because if the kids all bomb that, you can't go on.
Do you have a checklist somewhere, or is it more just like for you, like, okay, overall, I see that most of my kids are not getting this. So, or do you do something at the individual level?
I don't really keep track of like every single day, but like we mentioned, I use GoFormative for pretty much all of my assignments, because then it is logged. It is in a place I can pull up every single lesson that they've done. I can see, it gives me green and red if they got it or they didn't get it. It tells me an overall class percentage. how did my class do as an overall? And then I can look more at the individual level too. So I use that for almost every class assignment, because then it is all in one place. And then my students also know they're going to do work and go formative today, because we do it every day.
Well, that's awesome. What in the research that I found, and there's this book I'm reading called The New Art and Science of Teaching by Robert Marzano. But he breaks it down to even just like our polling tools. So
yeah,
as confidence techniques, like how confident are you with this particular content? He talks about like hand signals, like thumbs up, thumbs down. And I thought I could definitely do that whenever we get new row, but that's not something I can necessarily do right now. But he did talk about polling. I mean, I don't think he used the word polling tools, but like A, B, C, and D, where we can use that. But the other one he talked about was a color-coded card. And green is confident, yellow is uncertain, and red is stop and explain. And this is something I haven't really done. I was going to talk to you about it and see your thoughts about it. But what if I put like something on the board and put like a, I don't know, some sort of indicator. I've seen people put like Mickey Mouse and stuff like that, and I could just have them grab it. And then that way it's kind of, it's still, my worry is that they won't be honest with those kinds of things, because they'll be worried about what other people think if they just drag their name over type thing. But if I just put some anonymous characters on there, then they could do that. What are your thoughts about that? I don't think I do that enough. I ask how confident they are. And it's probably some ignorant thinking. Like, why do I need to know what they think? You know, like they can just show me if they do. Like, why take a minute to do that? But what are your thoughts on that? About actually gauging their confidence, how they feel about the content.
Yeah, self-assessment is so huge, and it sometimes they can't answer our questions, but they're like, I get this. I actually just was going through my phone deleting pictures, and there was a screenshot I took from somebody's story or something a while ago, and it was kind of that same thing. It was like a bar that said like on green, like I'm an expert, I can teach this to someone. Then it was like yellow, like I'm working on it. And there is a red side, like I'm lost, kind of like that little scale. And I was thinking about that, like, how could I use that? I've had them write their name, but again, sometimes kids are a little unsure. Or like I've had them use their pointer tools, but then again, it's, I don't know who did that. So yeah, that's kind of a hard one to think about. How could you do it privately? Like you could have them send you a private chat, but then you have to save your chat.
Yeah. And that gets so busy, and it's not all in one place. So, it's challenging. 'Cause also I thought about, there's this Bitmoji craze going around, but there's a website where they can actually go on and create their own. It's not a Bitmoji, but I forget what the name of it is. I will look that up and put it somewhere in the description of it. But
yeah,
it starts with a P. Oh my gosh. But they can go into your class and create their own avatar. So it looks exactly like them. And I was thinking I could do that and use it for attendance. Like they can go in and move their character over, and then I could use that throughout classes. So they could potentially take their character and put it over there, but still not, they're still going to be those kids that are worried about what other people think. And I hate that. And so I'm trying to open that door for them, but
I know they have, well, you could even do something with like a Google form or something for them to give them, here's your scale, or there's other sites where you can put in, like you give them a code or something and they go in and put in their polling, something like that could work. But
I'm just trying to think of something that I could do very quickly, 'cause that's my problem. Like I only have 30 minutes. So And I think that's where my ignorant thinking came from. Like, because yeah, they should be thinking about where they stand with this. And yeah, that's important too, cognitively. But I was like, I only have 30 minutes. I need to cut down things. But yeah, after reading this book and just it's important. So some of the other things he talked about was like voting techniques, which I'm sure we do all the time. But there was another one that he mentioned called vote with your feet, which is like the multiple choice questions. And I'm assuming in a traditional classroom, like A would be over in this corner and B would be over in this corner. And I thought that'd be fun. But I guess some of the things that we already just talked about could be applicable there. And so I could put a little character up there and they can move where they want to be, especially if I had their little avatar. That might actually be fun. That's a good idea. To have all their little avatars in one corner, you know, like that would be
cool. Right.
So that might be fun. And then response board, which is stuff that we, I think, do all the time, true or false, multiple choice, short answers, and whiteboards. But what do you, when you do a question on the whiteboard, because it's not a simple yes or no or A, B, C, or D, what are some things that you typically look for? Like, let me just throw out an example for you. Like, do you teach primarily math or reading? I forget.
Math.
Told me, but I can't remember. So, so math. So, maybe you have them do a multiple choice or a multiplication question and you want them to explain their reasoning. What are some things that you look for in that answer or things that might be lacking? So as a teacher who is the real, I guess, origination of this question is, for any new teacher out there, virtually whatever, what should they be looking for in those kinds of questions, or what kind of things maybe to look for that are missing? If that makes sense.
And that's always a hard one, the whole explaining your thinking, especially virtually, because kids are shyer, I think. A lot of my students are a lot quieter in there. And so... That's a good question. I'm looking for a lot of them just to participate. As long as they're just showing me that they're even trying, then I'm like, hey, you're good. But still, like, are you getting the answer? A lot of it is I want to see just effort from them. And then from there, like, if they're not explaining it correctly, or they're like, I used my calculator, then we usually will have a good discussion on, okay, well, what else could we say? How did you do it? If you didn't have that calculator with you, all of a sudden, all of our calculators died. How would you do it? So I try to like...
Are they allowed to use calculators on their tests? That's my... They're not. I'm like, you're not supposed to.
Exactly. They're not. But they always do. But I always try to be like, okay, if you didn't have your calculator, because you're not supposed to be using it, how would you do it? So prodding them a little bit more. But it's a hard one, because virtually kids either love to participate or they love to walk away from their computers.
Either one.
So, yeah, it's hard to get them to really do it. And that explaining part of it, that's one of my goals this year, is to really work on the how and explain it more than I have.
Yeah, that's something I want to work on too. Yeah. Well, some things that I found that should be there but maybe not there are like procedural words, like before, after, next, or justificational words like because or result in. And those are things that I haven't been asking my kids to include in the past. And realize the importance of them now. Then if then statements. So I think what I'm going to do is in the beginning stages of the school year is make like an explained checklist or whatever in the corner. And what do they call those? Like starter sentences? What I'm going to put there. Because you're right. I think in the, we have a lot of kids that want to walk away, and I've been reflecting on that. Why do they want to walk away? And it's because of the lack of confidence. They're clearly not confident in that subject matter. And also, because of that lack of confidence, they don't even want to try. And something I saw online or on Facebook or whatever is that you never see anyone say, like, I'm just not good at reading. They always say, I don't like math, or my mom wasn't good at math, or, you know, whatever. And I noticed last year that I had lots of kids in reading class, but they wouldn't show up to their math class. Like, they had great attendance for reading, but wouldn't come to math. And like, what's the deal there? And I think it's because of that, is that I wasn't employing or empowering them to be able to discuss their lack of confidence in that subject area. And so I think those two things are going to really help. Do you ever do assessments like your Go formatives are just not recorded, that are not put into the grade book? And how do you decide which ones are going into the grade book and which ones are not?
So we didn't use grade book last year, so I never did.
That's right. Oh my gosh. So going into this year, what do you, that's right. I keep reading that. So it blows my mind that some school did not have that. So
I didn't even know it was an option.
I'm sorry that you did it, but everyone will have it this year. So what's your plan for this coming year? What's your rough draft plan, I guess? So,
but things are going to change. I won't put everything in, but a lot of things I'm thinking about almost more as like extra credit things to get them to participate, because then if they don't do it, they don't get the extra credit. But if they, as long as they just do it, give them a point for it or something, because then they're still going to do that in their online school and stuff for their lessons. So should translate into what they're doing in their lessons. I really haven't thought about what I would actually record, but for a lot of things, like I would look at when in my math small group, we finished adding fractions. If they did their formative assessments and their last check at the end of the unit, if they did it and they did their work at the end, they show me that, okay, now I get it. If I look at their online school and they did that unit and didn't do great, they have not mastered or overdue lessons they haven't done, but yet they've been coming to class and doing it with me, then I would go back and mark that stuff done for them, because they showed me in an alternate way. A lot of times I try to change, I take a lot of questions from that unit checkpoint, but I change them a little bit to meet their, I know these kids a little bit more, so maybe they need different wording or something, I don't know, or do a task instead of all these multiple choice questions. So they show me at the end of the unit, they know it. Then I go back and I mark stuff done for them.
Because that's what I was kind of thinking about with reading is pull stuff from there, like do a science unit, that one or whatever, and use the stories from there. And then if they come to class, then I'll just mark their science as complete or, you know, whatever. But I love what you said about the extra credit. Marzano talks about how students should be taking like these non-recorded or these non-pressure tests. And what I found last year is that I had kids do better on the practice tests like the week before, but then when it came to the actual test that was going into the grade book, they bombed it. And I was like, what? Yeah. And I even heard a mom say, you did awesome on the practice test. And it was the exact same, like, I think I just changed the numbers. Like, I don't even think I changed the stories. I just changed the numbers. And he bombed it. And it was just the stress. And so what I was thinking is that, because one of the, also the other things that I found was the frequency of formative assessments or progress monitoring. There was a study that one teacher was doing it every week. One teacher was doing, or, you know, it's probably not one, but one group of teachers was doing every week. One group of teachers was doing every other week. And then another teacher or group of teachers was doing it like once a month. And what they found is that really all the data was the same it as far as progress goes, because they're still doing good teaching, but the monthly one was not frequent enough to really be able to gauge. It just wasn't enough to know, to really know as a confidence level of the teachers and the students. But the biweekly and the weekly were basically the same. So what I was thinking about doing is every other week, maybe this is just rough draft, but those go into the gradebook, and the practice ones would be like extra credit. So because those kids who bombed it, you know, like they're not getting credit for the ones that they did great on. But if those were just extra credit, then that would maybe balance out the bombing part, is what I hope. So
yeah, and it gives them just idea. I think to participate,
right?
Because if you're like, okay, this isn't going to ding against you, but it's going to give you extra credit, they might be more apt to actually do it and try it, and then that might help them on the final one too.
And earlier you said that you hate assessments. I hate them too. I wish that we could go to like Norway or wherever where they don't do them. Like, I want to go there. I want to start my own private school here, because the public won't let me do that, you know? So I have to do tests if I'm public. But anyway, most of our kids come to, or at least for me anyway, speaking from me and my experience, most of my kids come with anxiety. They have, they don't like school. They need something different. And so I was thinking, although this isn't the different that they want, if I provide assessments on a regular basis, that will hopefully minimize their fear of you know, it, having anxiety towards this thing, because they're doing it all the time. And it's building up that, like, hey, this isn't scary. This is, this is just a, and going back to what you said earlier, calling it a check. We were talking at the end of the year, calling our benchmarks, instead of a test, a screener, because that word test is scary. So I like that you are change that up for your kids. So
My pre and post tests, I call my pre-tests, just like a check-in. And then I call my post-test to show what you know, because then they don't know that I'm testing them. It's a post-test, but they don't know that. I just call it to show what you know, show me. And they, then they don't freak out.
Do you ever worry that there is a parent on the other side, helping their kid? Like, I worry about that all the time. I do a lot, and I've talked about that a lot, but what do you do to help minimize that parent involvement? Because that's where I'm struggling. I've done a lot of things to kind of set up walls to discourage it, but I still have it happening, and I want parents to understand why we shouldn't be helping them. So what do you do to keep parents from helping on those formative progress monitoring? I think that's, even though that's not specifically about, I still think that is influential and will help with that. So what do you do? Sorry, long-winded question, but what do you do?
Nothing. I do the same thing. I'm like, you guys need to be doing this on your own, no parent help. But there's always those. And even like when we do STAR 360 for our progress monitoring throughout the year, and we don't do ours live like a lot of the other schools that I think you even do, where they have to have on their camera and stuff. We don't do that. We just send them the link and say, do it on your own. And they always have those kids that make like huge gains, and I'm like, wow. And then I ask, did you do this on your own? No, my mom read it to me. I'm like, what are you doing?
So let's brainstorm a little bit. What can we say, or what can we do to minimize that? Because I say this quite frequently, I'm ignorant. I'm a teacher. I don't know what it's like to be a learning coach, other than when my son went to district or distant learning. But even then, I was like, I found myself wanting to help him on one of like the ABC mouse assessments. I found myself wanting to help him. So, but I'm a teacher, and I fell into that. And so
my daughter did K-12. She enrolled in Orva when their school closed, and her first phonics quiz or unit test, she's going through and she says something wrong and go, really? I caught myself. So even, yeah, I did. I've been a learning coach too, and I've done it. It's so hard. And it's, as a parent, we know we don't want to see our kids struggle or fail. And I know she, even after I did that first one, then you and I were talking about how we were helping our kids on those. And then she took one and she got like an 80 something percent, and it was so passy, but she was like, what did I do wrong? And so it's, I think we have to do a lot of growth mindset discussions with these families, that it's okay to fail, and that you then need to, how do we use these tests that they don't understand to then build up and learn and review and try it again.
Right. One of the strategies that I read about was celebrations, and I like that you take a pre-test and a post-test. That's something that I need to do more often. I feel like I'm just progress monitoring. So I need to do a post-test. I think in my mind, I always considered, or I mean a pre-test. I think in my mind, that benchmark is their pre-test.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I guess I could still do that. Because one of the celebrations is just simply growth. And so instead of scores, like you made an 80 on this, it's like growth. People who grew like 2 points, you know, if it's just a point system or something like that. So that way everyone's on an equal playing field, regardless of your most advanced to your lowest. If everyone moves up 2 points or 10% or whatever you want to do, they're getting that celebration. Exactly. I think that will help too, so that way parents aren't like, well, they have to make a certain grade to be able to go to this celebration. It's like, no, they just need to grow. So so that's one of my strategies. It's going to take some extra time. So like, you know, it's going to be an extra class connect to do that. But I think it will
help. But in the long run, if it's going to help them and encourage them. That's the thing, is so many kids come to us so beat down from school that it's trying to find, okay, how can we bring them up? How can we help them to learn that school's not scary? And that you actually, I always tell my kids, I'm like, I am on your team. I want you to succeed and I want to help you. So tell me where I can help you.
Right. So now I guess let's talk about the actual formative assessments. I guess we talked about, you know, what they are and kind of those gauging. So, and then how frequently. I'm going to plan on doing one, at least, you know, I do my little check-ins like you talk about, like at the exit ticket each day, but I want to do something on a grander scale, even if it's just like 5 to 10 questions once a week at the end of the week, just to see where they are. And even the research says doing it biweekly is fine, but again, I want one of those to be a extra credit and one to actually be something that's not, you know, the real deal. But how do you create your assessments? I know your go-to is Go Formative, so let's just pretend I've never used Go Formative before, and you tell me about that and your whole process with that.
I love Go Formative. I will sing its praises.
And this is not sponsored, it probably should be after this. But go ahead, tell us all about it.
So Go Formative, what is great with it is easy to create an assessment. So like let's say I'm checking in with my students on adding fractions. And so I go in there, I like to do like at the end of, let's say it's a end of the unit kind of, or no, let's do a mid unit. So usually like I'll do one, most of my units, when I do like my intervention groups, or I try to do like about 2 weeks, depending on the topic. So end of the first week, I want to see how are my kids doing? What do I need to review next week and stuff to finish it up? So I go into Go Formative. A lot of times I pull my questions from the curriculum. A lot of times I'll just take a look at those quizzes and see what are they asking. So I want to make sure I'm covering what they're being taught in their curriculum too. So I'll go in, either pull just like lesson quizzes, since I do math, it's, we don't have unit quizzes. It's only after the chunks. And so I'll pull questions. I can do a multiple choice. I usually do at least like one multiple choice question. I like to do at least one short answer. Go Formative is great because you can do show your work. And so our kids are amazing with their drawing with their mouse. I don't know how they do it. I can't do it, but they're really good. Or they can type in numbers too. And so I'll do a show your work so I can see where are they going. And then I try to do a deeper one. And so I try to build in my levels. So just like a multiple choice, short answer, show me your work so I can see if you're making a mistake, where are you making a mistake, and then an application. They also just added in something where I can have a short answer and show what you know in one question or show your work. So that's really nice because then they show me their work and then they type in their answer and it auto grades it for me.
Is that part? So I know that there's a free and then premium. Yes. So is that part of the free part or is that part of the premium part? Do you happen to know?
Good question, okay if you don't. I have a premium account.
Yeah, I know. Like you have your own. So.
Yeah. I think the dual one is.
I know the dual, your premium. Own. Well, I think you can show your work and it's not premium, but I was wondering if the integrated part was.
Yeah. So. It might be, might be one that's a premium one. So I know there's a lot of features.
There's a lot of free and I only used the free one and I was happy with it.
I did free for a couple years and we finally paid for it last year. There's still a lot that you can do with the free version. I recommend, it's not that much money.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, why do you recommend buying it? So what made you be like, you know what? I'm going to buy it. So what were those?
So one thing, I really... split it with my team.
Okay.
We have one account for all the fifth grade. So all our fifth grade students are in one account. And so that makes it a little cheaper. It's like $40 each for the year. It's doable. But I can assign to specific students. So that's really nice. Like we do help sessions. If kids bomb a checkpoint in their online school, we invite them to a session. We reteach that topic and then they take it again. I can assign that recheck to only the students who need it, which is really nice. There's a couple reports that you can get that are different. I can't even think of what they are. And there's a couple different ways.
I always feel like I want to buy something because of the reports, though. Like, right. I really just want that report. I don't care about the other features. I want these reports. So, But yeah, go ahead. Sorry. But I understand that reporting part is that I want the data.
Yeah.
I want it.
Yeah. It allows you to, I think embedding audio is only in the premium one, which is really nice, especially for our sped kids. Any tests that I put in there, I also read it to them. Okay. So it's really nice.
Yeah, I was like, why do you do that? Or when would you use the audio? And that makes perfect sense for your students who have a reading accommodation on the math test. That makes total sense. So
yeah. All right. So we do a lot of that. And there's also the ability to, for them to use audio for their answers. And I think that's a premium one too, which again is nice for those kids who need the text to or speech to text. Instead of them typing it, they can talk their answers. I just learned recently, like done all this embedding things. I've heard you can embed Flipgrid in it now. And there's a couple
I noticed the embedding, like you can put, I think, a YouTube video in there, which I've never done. I've only ever used it for just multiple choice questions. So I haven't played with it as much as you have, but it's my hope to kind of dig into it more this coming year. So whenever so do you just send these links out or so do they have their own account in which they can just log into? Okay. So, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I create accounts for all of them at the beginning of the school year and then they should know their username and password. Not always. I got it on the last day of school. What's my username and password? But they should know. So I just, you can send the link to So once you create your formative and you assign it to your class, then you can send an exact link. And so you send it, they log in, it opens up the assignment for them, or they can log into GoFormative and then it has all their assignments right there. And then they get working on it and they have lots of different ways. What I love is it gives you real time. And so I can see who's in there working. They changed it just this year at the end of the year to show if they've opened it but not worked. And so that's been really good. Like I can go in there and be like, either when they first get started, it doesn't give you a notification until they've put in an answer in their first question. So if I see, I've sent out my class and I see that dot next to kids, I'm like, okay, they're working. They're in there at least. But then if it gets for a while, I can be like, hey, you opened this like 10 minutes ago. I haven't put an answer in yet. How are you doing? So that right there, I can check in with those kids and get them to hopefully get logged in and working. But then it gives me real time. I can click through their answers, see how they're doing. If it's a multiple choice, it gives me that red and green. And then I know really quickly, how are they doing? What do I need to help them with? If it's just a class assignment, a lot of times I'll go through there and I can be looking, go, oh, this kid's not getting this. And I can hop into their breakout and be like, hey, I just saw your answer for question one. Let's go through this one together. And then I can application share their answer, or I'll screenshot it and put it up there and we can talk about it together. Or if I see multiple kids not getting it, I'll pull them back really fast. Be like, hey guys, let's go through this. So it gives me that really quick real-time feedback that I need. And it helps me to know. And then if it is like a midweek check-in, then I know after they finish it, I go, okay, these kids, most of them got this. Okay, we need to review this. Let's do this for warm-ups next week. Or they all were kind of not understanding simplifying. So let's do simplifying for warm-ups next week to make sure they get it. And then, yeah, it gives me really good feedback. I can also tag the standard for it. And then there's a really cool report that then I can go through and say, okay, who is not getting fractions NF1, I can click that and it'll show me who hasn't mastered that. So then I know.
Yeah. My favorite part of it, they don't have their own account. So I've always just sent a guest link and they have to type their name in. But
oh, yeah.
I love the real time aspect mm-hmm. of it is I remember having my team use it the entire for one of our progress monitorings. And I'm so thankful because they just go with the flow. I'm like, hey, we're going to use something different for our formative assessment this week because I saw this on Instagram from Katie and I want to give it a go. And we all love that we knew instantly what questions they did not get, because before if we use like a Google form or something like that, we'd have to wait until everybody is done to be able to see those graphs. And and so it was like, oh my gosh, as our kids were taking them, my kids do not understand number four. They're all getting number four wrong. And so the next day we used number four as our opening question for our math. Yeah. And so it was really, really awesome to see that data in real time. And and so, yeah. And so one of my questions is with GoFormative, if you pay for it, does it house all of their assessments so that way you can see just like Johnny or Lisa's and all of their assessments all at one time and see how they like progress?
Yeah, there's different reports. There's some I haven't even played with because there's so many. And yeah, you can take a look at you can pull up per class. And so if you want to look at, okay, how is this kid doing in my math small group? I can pull up just my math small group, or I can pull up an individual student. Best way I have found for like, if I want to look at how is this specific student doing, I log into their account because I have all their usernames and passwords, because then I can log into their account and it shows everything, all their assignments, as long as you return their grade, then you can see their grades. It also helps just to see, have they done their assignments? If you have a lot that aren't done, then you're like, you're not doing your work. But there's different ways that you can look at, like, okay, this specific student, how have they done on these checkpoints and things? So it's really nice.
One thing I love about GoFormative as well is that you can create your own problems. USA Test Prep for our, so we use NWA maps 3 times a year, and then in between those, we make like a mock state test in USA Test Prep. And one of the things I absolutely hate about it is that I can't import my own problems into it. So I'm limited to just the stories that they have and the questions that they have, and I hate that. So I love that about GoFormative is that it's very, you can adapt it. The only thing that I wish that GoFormative had, and maybe I'm missing it, is that I wish that I could change the layout and how it looked for the kids. I wish I could put the stories on the left and the questions on the right, just like on a state test, and how that would look. Right. But otherwise it's my favorite. I've used Edulastics as well. I think that's how it's pronounced. And it does that. It does have the stories on the left and the question on the right, and you can put like several tabs in there. So we use that for our constructive response formative assessments to check in on their writing. But I really just want one thing. I hate having my kids go
import it as a PDF. And I think with the free version, you get like 20 pages or something. So if you make it as a PDF, you can import that. And then over on the right, then you put your questions, and then they can scroll through the questions and the story stays there as long as it's,
Because I'm already like copy and pasting things anyway to import those. Right. So I could just, that's an easy thing. Put it in Word and then export that out as a PDF. And so that way it takes out all the other stuff that I don't want. So we talked a lot about those kinds of assessments. Now I kind of want to brainstorm because one of the assessments that or formative progress monitoring that Marzana talks about is student interviews. And I've never done that. Have you ever done a student interview virtually or before in a traditional? I've never done a student interview to measure progress and understanding, but have you ever done anything like that?
Not really. That's kind of one thing I was actually in my classes. One thing I was going to do this year is goal setting and then checking in with them every month to kind of check in. How are you doing? We do the only like one-on-one things that we do is our progress monitoring. We do Start 360 3 times a year. And then we also at the same time do teacher created. Actually, I think we're doing Start 360 more next year. I don't know. But we do teacher created assessments that they do one-on-one with us. And that's kind of nice because then I can see how are they doing as they're working. And I see them live. They work on the board. I save their slides, all that. And we do those based specifically on what they just did in their curriculum. And so that's kind of nice. We can check in because Start 360 covers everything. But I can be like, okay, you guys just finished fractions. I'm going to do a check on your fractions. And so that way, that's only like one-on-one check-ins that we do. But during that time would be something we could throw in a student interview. And
yeah, I was thinking we already have to do those calls, they're in connection calls, that this would be a perfect conversation to have. Not obviously at the very beginning of the year, but later on in the year. And maybe it's just like one question because those are supposed to be about building connections anyway, but talking about, hey, how do you feel about fractions? If I gave them a specific problem, like, what'd you have for dinner last night? Oh, pizza. Okay. What fraction of pizza did you eat? How many pieces were there? I thought that'd be perfect. It wouldn't be what Marzano was talking about having like a clear, he talked about having a clear progress to the interview and using a proficiency scale and a prompt. I mean, it's a whole thing. And, I could still talk one-on-one with these kids about their learning and their thinking process, because you don't always see, well, you never see their thinking process unless it's a math problem. So, and they write it out, you can follow their thinking process, but with reading and all those other ones, you can't. So I thought, that would be, that would be awesome. And then one of the last ones that they talk about is student generated assessments. Have you ever, I've never done that. They're fourth graders or third graders. I've never thought they had the power, and maybe they shouldn't, but, or should give them an opportunity. But have you ever given them an opportunity to create like an essay problem or a multiple choice problem or a fill in the blank?
Not really. Sometimes in like for an extension, I'll be like, okay, you finished all your work. Okay, now you go and write a math problem for me.
Yeah, I have done that.
The only way I've ever done it.
And it was more like a time filler, okay? Done? Okay, create your own problems.
Or your high flyers that they fly through all your other tasks you have for them. But I've never had like... yeah, like this is your task for today. I don't think I've ever really done too much about that.
Absolutely. Well, what are some other things that you, because I just threw a bunch of my research out there and wanted to get you talking about it, but I know you've done some research too, and you're the queen of formative assessments. So what are some things that we should just know about formative assessments, or just anything that you've learned, or just anything? I don't know what to ask. So just like kind of open that door. So I've asked all my questions, but I know there's still so much to know. So much.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is with formative assessment, the name is scary. And I think it's just teachers need to just know that they need to be checking in and logging that too. It's not like, I know a lot of teachers that they do that, but they're not like tracking it. And so it's just,
I've been guilty of that. It was just something that I had to do to mark off a checklist for DDI. And so, which I hated, but keep preaching, keep going.
So
I wanted to say I'm guilty of doing that at times. Yeah. So, but go ahead.
I was too, until like really the last year or two was when I really started to actually like track my students' learning and stuff. And so it's track it at least once a week, have something where you're going to check in and track it and do something with it. Don't make it scary. It's low pressure. Formative assessment, it's not your summative. So when I started my program, my master's program, one of the first assignments was formative and summative. And I was like, I have no idea what these are. What's the difference? And so I had to Google it and figure out. And so it's formative assessments are not to be scary. They're not to be high stakes tests or something. It's just a check-in. And do something with it. That's something that's huge is... I would check in with my students, but then what am I doing with it? So that's something huge, is just actually have a plan for what you're going to do with it. Don't do an assessment just because your principal told you you need to do formative assessments. You need to actually do something with it. And what that is can be, give them, maybe you're going to change your lessons for the next day. Maybe it's if your school uses Stride or IXL or any of those things, maybe you're going to assign something in there for them to practice because they showed you they need some extra practice on it. If it's a kid who's flying through it, you're going to give them some extension activities. Don't forget those high flyers too. That's something that's I've been thinking a lot about, is those really high kids. They're going to get bored if we're not giving them something too. So, the biggest thing also is do something with it. Make adjustments.
Make adjustments. One thing that we're doing this next year is what I would have called like a flex flex group, but that's not what it is, because I know some schools have a flex program where those kids do something different. So it's not that, in case, but it would be like, okay, I'm just going to take these few kids for the next 2 weeks and then I'm going to put them back. And essentially it's RTI, but it's a flexible group. And so we're going to be doing that next year. And so that's what I'm going to be using my, my data for, is, you know, which kids still need this and need to come to this class. And so from, especially from those proficient groups where they don't have small groups, but they still need maybe a small group every now and then. So that's, that's going to be a struggle, because there's going to be some parents that don't want that. But, but I guess it goes back to that positive mindset that we talked about at the beginning, is how can I communicate to these families that I'm here as their teammate to support their kids, to make these academic gains. And if I don't have the best data, if I don't get the right information, how am I going to support them? And how is that going to help them reach their goals if they're in it? So, so I love that. It shouldn't be high stakes. I wrote that down. I wrote that down. So, cause I think I've made it feel high stakes. And and my intentions were good. I was trying to prep them, but I think that's also why my kids' anxiety went down, and maybe I should go in slower. And so that way at the end of the year, it just feels like a normal thing. And it's not, maybe I can create it so it doesn't feel high stakes at the end of the year, even though it is high stakes. So yeah, that's powerful. So thanks for making that magic happen. So, anything else about formative progress monitoring that we as teachers in general should just know, that you've learned along your ways?
Oh, I don't know. I think that's a good chunk of it. There's so much to learn. There's so many things you could do with it.
I know you're studying, but most schools, I think, have, or most public libraries have EBSCOhost of some sort of for free. And that's where I got most of my research, and then the book, of course. But as I guess as a call to action to anyone listening to this, is go check out GoFormative, go check out your local library's resources and see if they have EBSCOhost, or ask a high school teacher if they have EBSCOhost, because then you should have access to it as well. And do some research on formative assessments, because the more that we know, the better we will, the better we'll be. So, but thank you so much, Katie. I appreciate you. As you heard between Katie and I, there are a ton of different ways to gather data on your students. From a simple quiz function in Neuro as an exit ticket, using a progress monitoring platform like GoFormative, your interim assessments, or maybe interviewing your kids during your next enduring connection calls. Next week, how will you formatively assess your students? And more importantly, what are you going to do afterwards? Please head on over to our social media pages and share your ideas, your thoughts, any other platforms you like to use to formatively assess your kids. You can find those pages using in the description of this podcast, wherever you're listening to it at, it should be in there. But as always, be brave, take a risk, and most of all, have fun. We'll see you next time. Bye!